First you told Solomon that you could ween no god, and if we dared to question, then he wouldn't spare the rod. For you we worked the soil, for you we dug the moors, for you we shed our blood, fought so many pointless wars. And now you build your fences and you say there's nothing we can do. Say the world around us belongs fairly to the few, but about 6 billion people no doubt will agree this world is our home, not your property. It's the commons, our right of birth. And you would enclose the land all around the earth. Our future is your downfall when we cut this ball and chain. You who'd sacrifice the public good for your private gain. With our sweat we built the railroads, built cities on these shores.
Good afternoon and welcome to Corporations and Democracy for January 11th, 2019. This is the program that examines how corporations dominate our democracy and what citizens are doing to replace corporate dominance with true democracy. I'm Steve Scalmanini with co-host Annie Esposito. We're going to kick off the new year today with a look at a corporate water grab. The location is Weed, California, and hence the name of the program today is Water for Weed. No, not that weed. Weed, California. Surely many listeners have heard about legal wrangling over water rights and have heard Mark Twain's immortal wisecrack, whiskey is for drinking and water is for fighting over. Well, what's going on in Weed, California is a whole new level of complexity over access for water. With us today are two guests, both members of the Weed Nine, infamous locally in that area, as citizens who were sued by the Roseburg Forest Products Corporation for their involvement in trying to preserve the city of Weed's historic water source for the city. Bruce Shoemaker lives in Weed and is a researcher on natural resource conflict issues with a focus on Southeast Asia and hydropower. He's also a railroad preservationist, being a co-founder of the Black Butte Center for Railroad Culture. Bruce Shoemaker, welcome to Corporations and Democracy.
Thank you, Steve. Nice to be here.
And also with us is Bob Hall, a 49-year Weed resident and homeowner, current city council member there in his third term, I believe, past mayor, and 2014 Citizen of the Year. So, Bob Hall, welcome to Corporations and Democracy.
Well, thanks for having us. I'm very interested that there's so much concern about justice, but let's get it on.
Okay, well, can we start with a brief description? Bruce, can you just tell us just briefly, so where the heck is Weed and what makes that area special to you?
Well, Weed is a historic lumber town right on the slopes of Mount Shasta, so far northern California, about 50 miles south of the Oregon border in Siskiyou County, and so it's a area of amazing natural beauty and lots of resources, and one of those resources is water. Our community and the other nearby communities like Mount Shasta and Dunsmuir, our municipal water has always been just spring water from the springs on Mount Shasta that just percolate up and are then captured through gravity-fed water systems, right into everybody's homes. No purification needed.
That's great. I, by the way, I'm a city council person in Ukiah, where we pull the water out of about 300 feet under our feet below, and likewise, doesn't need treatment. It's that good, so I'm familiar with that a little bit.
And I guess a part of the description of Weed, we should mention that you had a fire in 2014, which certainly involves water, and also trying to catch up with all the damage that has been done and get restarted. So that's going to be an added complexity to an already really complex story, which people fighting for their own water, and it requires so much patience and perseverance and networking. So we're going to hear about how you managed to do that. And so let us know, what about the fire? Where are you starting from in the wake of that fire?
The fire was again in 2014, but it was devastating. And we're talking water, we would have lost a lot more homes, many more homes, if it wasn't for the gravity-fed system. As soon as the fire started, it was such a rage through, we lost all power. There was no power to pump the wells that we had. And the north end of the community is fed by the spring. And it we had probably 3 hours of extra water to fight the fire with. And this is one of the concerns we have as far as our safety. Roseburg wants us to drill wells, and the cost of it is prohibitive, obviously, but it's in maintaining them. But the fire safety is a real issue right now.
Okay, you know, that came to light. California. Okay, so that came to light in spades just in 2014. So your gravity-fed, very established, over 100-year-old water supply was used and essential for literally saving parts of the town just, 4.5 years ago now. And that is a gravity-spread fed spring. By the way, what's the pronunciation on the spring? A lot of letters in there.
Bohan.
I'm sorry?
Bohan.
Bohan. Oh, there, I didn't even think of that one. B-E-A-U-G-H-A-N for listeners.
Yes, Bohan.
Okay.
Yeah, so part of this story goes back 100 years or more, I believe, and I think you ended up having to buy your own water because it was so confusing, but you want to start 110 years ago? How did this all come about?
It actually, go ahead, Bruce.
I'm sorry. I should have said which one of you. We have Bruce and we have Bob here. Who wants to take this one? Maybe Bob. We had Bruce before talking.
Go ahead, Bob.
Okay. All right. Yes, and records go back to right the turn of the century. In 1909, it was water was actually adjudicated to the Weed Lumber Company, who were just forming here, and they had a community, and it was at that time it was dedicated to domestic and municipal uses, and then again in 1932, the last adjudication, it was adjudicated for domestic and municipal uses, 2.0 cubic feet per second to the community of Weed, and at that time it was the Longvale Lumber Company, and what happened at that time is that it was still a company town. All the houses were owned by the company. Mm-hmm. Everything was owned by the company. So they were getting water for their community. Well, in 1961, the city incorporated, and at that time, it should have the water should have came with the incorporation, because we incorporated 600 homes into the South Weed area, or into the Weed Municipal.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, the water, it should have come in 1961. The point there is that at that time, there was International Paper was the lumber company. And four of the five people that were on the new city council were employed by International Paper, which and honestly, they were just part of our community at that time, and they were the leaders, but they were still compelled to kind of insulate International Paper. So, in what happens in 1966, the city signed a water lease with International Paper, and that was fine until 1982. In 1982, International Paper left town. They got into some trouble back on the Mississippi River with their paper mills, and they had to liquidate. So they sold they were getting ready to leave the city, and at that time they gifted through a verbal agreement, and in 1982 they left. So we lost 750 jobs basically overnight. And they gifted the one. We have a letter that they gave City of Weed the 2.0, and At that time, in 1983, the city became the owner of that water, as far as the state goes.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was fine until 1996.
Okay.
In 1996, Crystal Geyser came to town.
Mm-hmm.
They, at that time, they came to the city, said, "Hey, you are the owner of this water. We'd like to make a deal with you to lease some of this water." And obviously, the city, we just lost 750 jobs a short time before that when they started talking jobs. Hey, you know, anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so they started into negotiations. And so at that time, they started negotiating. And then Roseburg came to this, into the scene and said, "Wait a minute, we have a 1966 lease, 50-year lease that was signed by the city." And so there was, they started looking, well, how'd this get changed at the state level? Nobody could find any paperwork at all how this happened. So it was kind of, it was basically dropped because the city at that was looking at it, well, we still had another 20 years on this water lease, so who's going to worry about, they're not really not going to take our water, so nobody really paid that much attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so Roseburg began selling water to Crystal Geyser. And then
let me clarify that for a moment. So that was in 96. So Roseburg, where the spring is located, by the way, it's on their property, that's my understanding.
Yes.
That's a timber company.
Yeah, it's a timber company.
Yes.
They started selling water instead of the city?
Yes.
Okay,
Roseburg stepped in and said, "Hold on a minute, we inherited the water right,
mm-hmm.
you know, when we bought the mill from International Paper."
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, there were several reasons, as Bob mentioned, there were several reasons beforehand that should have not been legitimate. First, going back to 1961, you know, the International Paper sold 600 homes to the people of the community,
yes.
and that mm-hmm. was to come with water. You know, that was mm-hmm. the understanding. And then, but there was some lack of clarity in the actual transfer of the water.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1966, they decided to dispense with it with a lease, you know, a 50-year lease, basically mm-hmm. giving the city free water, a dollar a year.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. So for a dollar a year, if the city gets free water from the spring on the property of the Roseburg Lumber Company, or Roseburg Forest Products, I think it's called. But
you know, when we talk about the land, you know, this was all private land of the company originally. Mm-hmm. It was a company town, and then when the city was formed, Roseburg just created the International Paper at the time created an island, you know, where the city limits wrap around three sides of the lumber mill.
Uh-huh.
So they purposely kept the mill outside of the city limits, even though it's very close to downtown Weed,
mm-hmm.
just for tax reasons and,
yeah.
you know, control. And so the spring that had fed the community, you know, was all of a sudden on lumber company land rather than the city land. But it was the city that then built the infrastructure up to the spring and,
mm-hmm. yes.
you know, spent millions of dollars building it all. And one of the customers of the city is the lumber mill.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it's on lumber company land really isn't that. I mean, it's been water rights is more about use than, you know, the property that the spring is actually on.
So the right to
also considered surface water also, and that's not the use. Nobody own surface water. It's not a well. It's surface water. It comes out of the ground and
gotcha.
Adjudicated down the stream.
Yes, and that involves the state. You know, the state gets to allocate mm-hmm. and record who owns what percentage mm-hmm. of the flow or this kind of thing. So
we were saying in 1996 there was no documents found to substantiate how the transaction happened. The state mm-hmm. had us as the owner and kept us the owner. And I think it's important to mention that in 1983, city started paying the water master fees in 1983, and we paid the water master fees until 2013. But in 2014, right after the fire, incidentally, Roseburg Forest Products began putting pressure on us making sure that they telling us they were going to take the water in 2016. We had to have some alternative water source.
Okay, now 2016. Let me mention slip one something in here. So 2016. That's significant. Is that that's 50 years after the 50 year lease was signed for this dollar a year in 1966. So they know that after 50 years, this is coming up, so they have some flexibility. Even though, now that's a 50-year time window, but even though 30 years into that time window is when the Crystal Geyser issue came along, and that's when Roseburg apparently asserted that the lease apparently didn't allow the city to sell water to Crystal Geyser, so Roseburg sold some of their flow to Crystal Geyser. Is that my correct understanding?
Yes, you are. Yes. Thank you for clarifying that.
Okay, yes. Great. So, okay, go ahead then.
Okay, so then in 2016, it was going to be up, and the lease was coming up, and the city tried to negotiate to try to extend the lease. We tried to purchase it. We tried to do whatever we could, because we needed, obviously, the water we've used for 110 years, we're pretty dependent on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one thing led to another, and a letter surfaced. A 1982 letter that was dated August 5th, 1982, and remember that Roseburg did not purchase the mill, the property and the mill until December of 1982.
Right.
So on August 5th, a letter was sent from the water master, Robert Steele, to Howard Neal, who was the resource director for International Paper, finalizing the water that they, that International Paper had as an asset to sell. And in that letter, it states that 2.0 was, per verbal agreement, was given to the city of Weed.
Okay, there's a letter in 1982 that establishes that the ownership of that flow belongs to the city of Weed.
Right. And gotcha. And the ironic thing about this, and more than ironic, none of this paperwork was found before, but it just happened to come to us from a Howard Neal's garage. He passed on, and his son gave us some documentation that he had in his garage. He had some international paper files in his garage.
Okay, so now,
letters,
now if we go to as 2016, as the 50-year deadline is approaching, Roseburg is saying that they want to claim the water back and create a new lease and blah, 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 blah. But this letter you're talking that establishes ownership, that wasn't found yet. Am I correct about that?
No, correct.
Right.
Correct.
So the letter... But it was in the possession. Let me add one thing. But the letter, there should have been two copies. You know, the city in theory should have had a copy somewhere. I don't know anything about that. But the other copy in possession of the lumber company, that copy should have been somewhere in their possession, and in fact was in the possession of someone who had passed away by that time. But the and was eventually found at a later date, later in 2016, by someone who was intentionally looking for that letter. But is it clearly established ownership back in the 1982 time frame?
Yes. And to be considered now, Howard Neal, who was the resource director for International Paper, became Roseburg Forest Products head engineer.
Right. So, in other words, a director management person of both companies, the International Paper and then the company that bought it out, the lumber company, you know, he did have this document. It was in the possession of someone, a management person in that lumber company, even though they didn't know it at the time as the 2016 deadline was approaching.
You were assuming they didn't know.
Yeah.
Well, yes, you're right. I was assuming that.
It's kind of breathtaking, this, all the verbal agreements and the letter that actually says who owns the water is in a garage somewhere.
I think it's really important to add on to as far as this letter is. We also, since then, we've received copies of that letter from International Paper, date stamped by their legal department, with notes on the side and some documents that they were the process they were using. They didn't know really how to designate this water to the city of Weed, and every intention was that they were trying to do that. And since then, like I said, the legal department date stamped it, and there wasn't any correspondence indicating that they objected to it. Everything was positive. They're trying to figure out. And here again, remember, the International Paper they were invested in our community. There was 750 people worked for International Paper, mm-hmm. Officials, the IP officials, were part of WEED. Many of them graduated, went the whole life in WEED.
Yeah, gotcha.
So that makes it a little different from some other situations like San Francisco and Bechtel, for example, where there was the city and the corporation against the citizenry. Here, it's a small enough town that everybody's sort of interconnected.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. And, yeah. You know, I think to kind of just summarize, you know, what happened was, you know, at the time that the lumber company definitely had an intention for this water to go to the people of WEED. The original lumber company, you know, it's very clear that just made sense. You know, it had been a company town, they sold the homes, it all went to the water was meant for the people. There was still another part of the spring that was for the lumber company to use for their industrial uses. So, you know, it was a split. And then mm-hmm. what happened is that after Roseburg took over the mill and nobody really paid attention to this issue, and there was probably some fault on the part of people in the city that didn't make sure that everything was ironclad, mm-hmm. you know, and people just didn't think it was ever going to be an issue. But all of a sudden, when Crystal Geyser came to town, water became a valuable commodity, which it had never been before. It was just mm-hmm. something we always had. And then what we saw is Roseburg eventually deciding that they wanted a cut out of this, that they had something that was valuable, spring water. And at first, they cut the city out of being able to make any money off of this, what had long been the city's portion. But then they went to a whole other level by, in 2016, saying that the city had to cease their use of their portion of the spring. That, you know, by dragging out this 50-year-old lease and basically taking advantage of what was kind of an unclear situation in terms of the actual documentation of the ownership change of the water.
Mm-hmm.
And so Roseburg just said to the city, you know, the day the lease is over, you got to be off this water and go dig wells. You got to, you know, find alternative sources of water. Ironically, this is right in the middle of our drought years. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. when California's trying to start to regulate groundwater, and it's, you know, we're right on the side of Mount Shasta. There's all sorts of, it's very hard to know what the groundwater situation is in any particular place. There's lava tubes, it's very complex geology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there can be decent water in one place and it's, you know, 500 feet under the ground, right, you know, 50 feet away. It's really hard to know.
Yeah, gotcha. Let me take a moment to tell listeners, we're just at the bottom of the hour here. We're discussing the a water crisis and water grab by a corporation in the town, or actually immediately next to the town of Weed, California. And we're speaking with two members of what became, and we'll shortly hear about what the Weed 9 are. Is it 9, I think? And we're speaking with Bruce Shoemaker and Bob Hall, both residents of the city of Weed, and both involved in trying to preserve the historic, very long-term water supply for the city of Weed. So go ahead and pick up where you were there. I think it was Bruce. Were you
okay? So the water lease agreement came up, and my impression is, and you know, Bob was on the city council, but that the city council felt intimidated that they were you know, Roseburg came in with their lawyers from the state capitol, and they said, you know, you've got to sign this. The city had declared a water emergency because of a worry that Roseburg was going to completely shut off the water on the day the lease ended. And they eventually, Roseburg offered a lease to that the city could use three-quarters of the water, 1.5 instead of 2 cubic feet per second, for a limited period of time while they developed other sources of water, but then would have to completely phase off the water. So, and really under duress, the city council agreed, a majority of the city council agreed to do that because they didn't really see any other option. And again, this is in the aftermath of this fire, you know, economically challenged town.
Yeah, right, very right. Revenue to the town is
for
down.
Legal fees and, you know, to an, and so our water group, the Water for Citizens of Weed, California, formed around this time to look at this because it just seemed like such an unjust situation. And we, you know, we involved a number of former city council members and other community leaders and other interested citizens. And we started looking at the water situation, you know, what could be done about this water grab. And the first thing we did was just a lot of publicity. We spread the word. We were able to get some good publicity at the time. Even in national, we had a New York Times article in October 2016. And a number of other regional, different environmental journals, different groups covered it. That created some interest in a documentary, and there's been a documentary done called Watertown. But we were trying to look at what we could do without actually having to go to court, because we knew we couldn't afford to do that. And so we were gathering as much information as we could and trying to research water rights law. And we went to the Watermaster District and the State Division of Water Resources, the, you know, the state of California state agencies. And we put together a complaint, you know, which included as much documentation as we could, and asked them to investigate the situation, because it just did not seem to be in accordance with a lot of California law about water being for domestic and municipal use, you know, being the first priority, and the 32 decree, which specifically included domestic and municipal use in the decree for Bohan Springs. We didn't see how they could just all of a sudden have it all for industrial use and just eliminate the domestic municipal part. Plus this 82 letter and the other evidence that showed that the intention of International Paper was to give the water to the people of Weed. So we filed a complaint with the state, and then we actually got the city council to endorse it, which was a kind of a change of heart. You know, the city council had been very intimidated by Roseburg initially and signed this water lease agreement, but we actually got the whole city council to vote 5-5 to support our complaint. And Roseburg turned around and sued us the next day. They sued the city of Weed. They sued our group. And they named 9 individuals, who we now call the Weed Nine, who they perceived as leaders or activists in this campaign. And it was called a quiet title lawsuit, but basically it was having both, the city ended up countersuing, so it became a dispute over the water right. But it was also a dispute over our right as citizens to speak out on this issue. Roseburg named us as individuals and said that we were clouding their title, basically, on the water, even though none of us were claiming it was our own water.
But you were you know, working on behalf of the community good there, clearly, and the history of documents that you came up with. I mean, it's clear history. Could have been slightly clearer, some of the documentation over the generations, let alone over the decades. But still, the intent was clear, and you're the people that came up with the document from 1982 that the corporation had possession of but didn't acknowledge, or maybe they didn't know. That's unclear. But you guys came up with that information. So this turned this became what's called a slap suit. So some of our listeners have heard of a slap suit. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Slap suit. It stands for Strategic Lawsuit Against Public Participation. What that is a lawsuit that's specifically designed to intimidate people into shutting up, and it's to shut up critics.
Mm-hmm.
And it's often used against environmental groups or citizens, say, fighting a toxic waste dump in their town or, you know, something like that. And they become increasingly common and are used to intimidate people that are trying to confront various threats in their communities. Mm-hmm. So they tend to be launched by companies or corporations against either individuals that are speaking out about the actions of the company or by, you know, against, you know, community organizations or nonprofits. So, you know, and we didn't really even know most people, you know, our group had never heard of these before. And you know, we were talking about 9 people that were not at all had a tradition of any type of activism. This included, you know, our former mayor, who's now 92 years old, is one of the people that got sued.
Mm-hmm.
A woman who's on our planning department, who's a, you know, tile artist in town. A couple other people who'd formerly been on the city council, and it even included people that used to work at the mill and were very, and I think that really showed how kind of included a guy who helps run the museum, the lumber museum in town, who, mm-hmm. you know, has been voted the Weed Citizen of the Year several times. You know, so a big cross-section of people. But people were kind of stunned. We got this, you know, we got the documents that weighed several pounds all on our doorsteps, and mm-hmm. yeah, it is very intimidating to get something like that and realize you've got a big company with unlimited, seemingly, legal resources all of a sudden coming after you as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
So we were very fortunate in that there's now a network of groups and lawyers and people that are fighting against these slap suits.
Yes,
and
indeed.
Mm-hmm. We got connected very fortunately with a group called the First Amendment Project, which is in Oakland, mm-hmm. And it's led by an attorney who's worked for 30 years on slap suits and in fact was involved in helping to draft the legislation in California which makes slap suits illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And he came up and started talking to us, and he had new other lawyers who put a team together to represent us. And it made a huge difference in our confidence level. He just said, let us handle this. You guys keep going with your campaign, because what slap suits are meant to do is distract you from your campaign and put so that you have to put all your resources and thinking into fighting this lawsuit rather than the cause that you're actually trying to fight.
That's great to hear. What was the name of that outfit again?
The First Amendment, and the lead attorney is Jim Wheaton.
Mm-hmm.
And they filed a motion to dismiss us from the lawsuit. This is going back to the summer before last. These legal proceedings just go on and on. And we had our hearing a year ago, December, so December 17, in the Superior Court in Yreka, our county seat. And the judge found for us and was really scathingly critical of Roseburg at this hearing and said we should never have been named. We were merely exercising our constitutional mm-hmm. rights that are protected right. under the U.S. and California constitutions. And Roseburg looked really bad when we got another round of publicity on it. And it seemed like we were on a roll and things were going really well. And then a couple months later, we found out that Roseburg actually was appealing this decision to drop us from the lawsuit.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And
okay.
Yep, they appealed it in March, and since then, they've extended the time to try to actually write a brief explaining why they have justification for doing that. Mm-hmm. They're doing it again right now. Just last week, they filed another request for a 90-day extension before they actually have to come up with their legal argument for why they still think it's legitimate to sue us.
Okay, well, so this is major hardball.
They're trying to drag it on as long as they can to kind of keep punishing us, keep this over our heads, but merely for speaking out on this issue. And then at the same time, they're engaged in this lawsuit with the city of Weed, which the city really did not want to fight because they know they don't, are the limited legal resources. So they're sort of draining the city's resources at the same time that, so they're still pursuing the water, and that's kind of where we're at right now. It's still an ongoing dispute. Bob, do you want to talk about what we just did up at Springfield at the Roseburg headquarters?
Yeah, I can lead into that. I think I'd like to try to explain from the city standpoint regarding a SLAPP lawsuit also. We have spent $450,000, and the game here, the boundaries of the game seem to be that it's time. The clock is ticking. As long as these corporations or Roseburg keeps us in the vice, and the clock is ticking, the money just keeps adding up. We're actually at a point right now in this city, we have to have this water. Mm-hmm. And there's a strong possibility that the only way we're going to get it is to claim eminent domain, and we have to pay for something that's already ours.
Gotcha, but yes.
It's actually coming to the point now where when you start looking at dollars, the dollars that are going to be spent, the way the game is played right now with all the extensions, we're talking millions of dollars, very well could be millions of dollars to take the risk of, we feel that we have all the information that you win, but there, as you appeal this thing and it's appealed with all the extensions, we're talking very well millions of dollars. And
yeah. To the city, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Let me go back a couple of minutes with a quick question. On the SLAPP suit, which has been refiled in March of last year, did I get that correct? Or refiled, appealed, whatever it's called.
Well, they appealed it to the state court.
Yeah,
the,
so they appealed it. Okay.
Court
now,
in Sacramento.
Has that cost individually, or is that something that you don't want to talk about? What's the expense?
The legal costs on our side are mounting up. The First Amendment Project is what they, one of their, as a nonprofit legal collective, they have agreed to pro bono representation for our group.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they won in Superior Court, they requested that Roseburg reimburse their legal fees because it was ruled as an illegal SLAPP suit, which means that the group that brought the lawsuit has to pay the legal fees of the defendants. And I think that's what, and so they're still fighting about that. And
so they're still, is that part of the appeal?
It was easier for Roseburg to appeal than to, be willing to pay our legal fees. We still had to pay close to $400 each initially just to file a defense.
Uh-huh.
So we've got around $4,000 of our money tied up now for, it's soon be 2 years.
Yeah.
In legal fees, which if we win or it's dismissed, I think will be reimbursed to us.
Mm-hmm.
So so far we're okay. It's just that we've got this hanging over our heads a lot of the people in our group are, not wealthy to put it, I remember one of our members saying his wife was almost in tears when they first got the summons because, worried that the legal fees could, bankrupt us or bankrupt their family, or they could lose their home or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that still hangs over people's heads. I mean, if we were actually to lose, that Roseburg then would, you know, they had already, I believe, filed one motion, you know, to recover their legal costs if they had won on the motion to dismiss. Mm-hmm. So it's still something that kind of psychologically hangs over the nine of us, and we just don't, you know, we think we have a really good chance of winning at the, because our case is so strong, but I don't know, it's the court system, you never know for sure.
I agree, and the Roseburg is playing absolute hardball. Every possible angle they can work against you, they are using, so...
One of the things we
haven't... So anyway, in December, just last month, we decided we needed to get some more attention on it, and we went up to Springfield, Oregon, to the headquarters of Roseburg Forest Products, and we brought about 25 people up from Weed on two minibuses, and we had a protest out in front of their corporate headquarters on a business day over the lunch hour, and another one of the organizations that's involved in this anti-SLAPP coalition is based in Eugene, the Civil Liberties Defense Center. And so they helped facilitate it, and we had some, you know, other involvement of some other groups in this anti-SLAPP coalition, and it was really successful. We had over 100 local people from Eugene came out to support us as well, and, you know, we had a real energetic rally and got a lot of good press coverage, and even the newspaper, the daily newspaper in the Register Guard in Roseburg's hometown, they had a newspaper editorial and which called Roseburg a bully to their faces. So we felt pretty good that we at least got the message out right in Roseburg's hometown.
This is really interesting how successful you've been in getting your case out. And I think this is probably good information for all of us, how you organize. But one thing we haven't really talked very much about is Crystal Geyser. And what does that have to do with this?
Well, obviously, it increased the value of water. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a very good chance that in 1996 there was at least a verbal, if not a real contract, that in 2016 the water that we have they would be able to purchase. But we're assuming a lot there, but it sure fits. I think it's real important that what I'd like to hit on is that we met with the people up in Springfield, and people from Eugene came down, and the acknowledgement that you know, because originally when we were kind of saved by having Jim Wheaton come to our rescue, we kind of, whoo, that was close. Mm-hmm. But we didn't understand what was really happening nationally. And we were invited down to Greenpeace, invited us down to San Francisco. And then the light went on. Oh, this is a lot more than just water. This process for justice is outrageous right now. That the importance of this being able to. Let me back up. When we look at this now, we were so close to just rolling over. Mm-hmm. To say. Forever, just to stomach it. I mean, in our country, it sounds crazy, but we were within a day or two of just having to roll over and never say another word. Mm-hmm. And this process is in the SLAPP lawsuit was against the city also, but the city was there was something in the legal dimensions of it that we didn't have to really be concerned with it. But now back to the clock ticking, the city who represents the people, this is not justice at all. This is it's a horrendous attempt and morally corrupt process here. That in what we're finding out that we're up in Eugene or Springfield, Oregon. There are other Roseburg has water issues going on up there, doing the, as you say, a water grab. Mm-hmm. And they're becoming a resource company more than a lumber company.
Yeah.
They are now a resource company.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just want to make sure that the intimidation that we felt, it was overwhelming. I mean, it was just to go home and tell your family we're being sued.
Mm-hmm.
For saying, just saying that the water, you know, with all the information we had at hand, it was tough. And it's I want to say this last thing, I'll get off my soapbox, but I was at the city council last night meeting, and Pledge of Allegiance. At the last one, it said liberty and justice for all.
Mm-hmm.
And we're close to losing that. And it's obvious that it's not going to be there. They're going to put a gun to your head to say you can't speak.
Yeah,
they're going to just say you can't afford it.
It's liberty and justice for all, but you have to stand up for yourself to get it sometimes. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to mention to listeners that there was a caller that was on the line a few minutes ago. So if that person wants to get a call in before the end of the program, please just give a call back here. At the number here is 895-2448.
Yeah, we've had a couple of calls, but the situation is so complicated, we couldn't really break into the middle of an explanation. It's an unusual content in that regard.
I wanted to mention something. I think I'm reading between the lines of some of the information on your website, which I should mention and wanted to mention later in the show anyway, but that's waterforweedca.org.
That's right.
Okay, and then there's another one called cawater.net. I don't know whose that is, but...
I'm not sure. There is a fake one that Roseburg organized.
Oh, serious? Oh, my goodness. No, I didn't read that. So they're... Holy smoke. These guys are really going as far as they can go to win the... They're seeing dollar signs in this water in the future, I guess.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you have been talking to your neighbors closer to home, the city of Mount Shasta. They've been having a go-around, haven't they, also over the water?
Yeah, absolutely. There's kind of another, it's affiliated by name, but technically separate part of Crystal Geyser is trying to take over and expand an old water bottling plant in Mount Shasta. So so that's also a big controversy right now in Mount Shasta. And we've certainly had some support from some of the people in Mount Shasta and organizations that are interested in issues of spring water all around the mountain. There had previously been a big battle in another Mount Shasta area community, McLeod, which had a Nestle water bottling proposal a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's a proposal for a smaller water bottling facility. So, yeah, that's one of the interesting things. We really got connected and learned about the whole phenomena of bottled water and what a commodity it is now, not just in the Mount Shasta, but in, you know, there's been a big battles in Oregon, in Southern California, and really all over the country, Michigan and Maine and places in Canada, where water bottling companies are trying to get control of what have been, you know, public or municipal sources of water to make money off them, and usually paying next to nothing for that privilege. And, you know, in the case of our plant in Weed, it's, among other places, they export a lot of water to Japan, which I find really amazing that they put bottled water in little plastic bottles and send it all the way to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time that Japan produces bottled water and sends it over here and to other places.
Yeah, incredible, huh?
And so there's a huge amount of money being made just basically by branding water and having it be a commodity. And so these companies want to think of water as just a commodity to be bought and sold rather than something that is a basic human right or that people should, you know, first have access to. So it's, we realize we're part of, I mean, we've got a big battle on our hands, but we're part of really a battle all over the country over these type of issues, and all over the world, really, mm-hmm. because water privatization issues. And I mean, in some ways, our thing with having been a company town is unique, but really, a lot we probably have more in common than you'd think with a lot of other communities that have faced a loss of their water, yeah. or threats to their water resources.
In other parts of the country, and you mentioned Michigan, I believe that's one of them, there are places where the aquifer for the public use has been drawn down by bottling plants. So different issue than we're dealing with here, but still in the category of bottled water, you know, butting into and controlling or damaging public resources. So.
Yeah, there's the bottled water companies, and then there's also the companies that want to do all this service, like come in and run your water system for the city. And I know that happened in Stockton. The city council of Stockton handed it over, even though the people wanted to vote on it. They signed on the contract before the vote could come, and that angered the people who eventually did get it on the ballot and got the water back. Sometimes this... Go ahead.
An interesting... statistics have been kicked around is the profit margin on water is 243,000%.
In other words,
yes, as far as what you purchase for and what you sell it for. So there's a lot of the profit margin is there for the commodity, that's for sure.
Indeed. No wonder Roseburg is acting like they see big dollar signs.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and there's a lot of profit.
So you won the first round of the slap suit. It's on appeal. And then is there another suit filed regarding the EIR? I mean, are locals trying to undo or invalidate the water lease agreement? Is that my understanding?
There is. Yeah, our case, it's on appeal. We think we'll win the appeal.
Mm-hmm.
But there's actually, it's complex. There's also the direct lawsuit going on between the city of Weed and Roseburg over the actual water right,
which
is a little different from the slap suit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Roseburg filed it all at the same time, but really the part that was naming us as individuals is the slap suit.
Right.
But it's also just this draining of resources. There was also in 2016 a different community group formed to challenge the water lease agreement, and they have... They said it didn't take into, there was a number of issues around that.
EIR, CEQA issues, California Environmental Water Quality Act.
Around CEQA, whether they called, basically by taking away the city's water and saying the city would have to find other sources of water like wells before any environmental studies had been done with groundwater, access, that violated CEQA. That's been a separate legal proceeding, which I'm not exactly sure where it's at right now. If the actual ownership that was filed before the city kind of got into it directly with Roseburg, I think those citizens saw it as the only way to try to put some pressure on it.
Let me slip in.
That it's just directly, the water right is under dispute. That's kind of the primary.
Well. I need to wrap up then. I want to tell listeners that further detail, although a few things you've mentioned were I didn't see on the website. That's it. waterforweedca.org.
And we are absolutely out of time here.
Okay. So thank you for being with us. This is...
There's a donations page on there.
Okay, super. Yeah, if you could help out with that, great. All right. Thanks for being with us. Great story, and good luck to you there.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for your interest.
Thank you.
Thank you both so much, and we wish you such luck.
I write up.